Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and a guy that I've been searching for years, trying to track him down. Say, come on, you got to come on, you come on. Finally agreed to come on. My man, Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag Marketing. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, Bubba. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. So,
good.
Chris, tell me about, first of all, let's talk about some of the stuff that you did in your past life. You were a center at Colgate University?
Yeah, you know, I was. I got a little too small to go to a big Division I school, Pitt, Penn State. But I went to Colgate, which was 1AA, and a great school, great education, and I was real lucky that they recruited me.
Yeah, well, you're a big guy, and, you know, I always see Chris. He's always dressed as neat as a pin, and tells me that comes from his private parochial school background, huh?
Yeah, you know, my parents were old school, and so I guess I benefited from it. I didn't like it when I was going through it, but, you know, 40 years later, I'm glad that they made me go sit there with a suit and tie on and answer to the Jesuit brothers, yes, sir, no, sir.
And, of course, you can see Chris on, he appears all over the place. He's on RFD TV, he's on Sky News, he's on Fox. So, pretty well known, pretty big in the business. Chris, tell us about Top Third. What is Top Third?
Well, Top Third, we're a brokerage group. It was started by Mark Gold, who's kind of a mentor of mine. I met him back in 1991 when I first came to the floor. He was the chairman of the Bean Pit. And about 18, 19 years ago, he decided to leave the floor and he wanted to do a hedging program because he recognized there was a need for American farmers to really have some help hedging as opposed to brokers just trying to tell them that they know where the highs and the lows are. So he had an idea to do that, and we kept in touch over the years. I stayed on the floor until about 2008, 2009. Mark started with about 50 clients and with a company to close to, there's about 14 brokers and about 2,800 clients spread out all over the U.S. So he did it bit by bit. He goes out and does one-hour and two-hour seminars and basically explains our hedging program, which is the heart and soul of it is the fact that, you know, an American producer or a farmer or a rancher, they're basically a net long speculator. So there's no difference between them and somebody that says, all right, I'm going to go to the bank and borrow $100,000 and get long corn, wheat, or beans or hogs or cattle, whatever they're producing. And we recognize that, number one, that they're a net long speculator. And then we use a long option strategy to protect the downside, to keep the upside completely open. Risk management as opposed to sitting here trying to look at the charts and always pick the high and pick the low. You know, you've been in the business long enough to know that over time, you know, it's what you've done over 10 or 12 or 13 years. It's not when you have one or two or three hot years. I know you've been on the floor a long time too. You've seen that where guys have two or three hot years and then, you know, they go cold for three or four years. So that's really what he recognized. There was a need for that. Most American farmers are basically bulls by nature. So he built this program around recognizing that, and also by using the hedges to keep them out of trouble as opposed to adding to their risk. You already got enough risk. You're borrow a lot of money or to put a crop in, and so we try and make sure that at the worst case scenario, they've got their break even covered, and they keep the upside completely higher, completely open. So it's a kind of a a very simple strategy, like
right.
everything else. If you stay disciplined with it over time, it's a good program. And you know, I think the proof's in the pudding. After 18, 19 years, we've built a pretty nice operation. And I think most of our clients are happy with what they do with us, if they've been with us for 2, 3, 4 years.
So when you look at and you're out, you know, searching for a new client, are you looking just for example, grain traders only? Do you guys get involved with cattle? Do you get involved with some of the other softs? What's your target market?
Well, 90% of the guys are corn, wheat, and beans. But then there's a good chunk of our business, too, especially in the last 5 years where cattle prices, got extremely high. So we do work with cattle producers as well as hog producers. And, you know, with the hog producers and cattle producers, there's two risk areas there. They're long the cattle, long the hogs, so they have to worry about the prices dropping before they sell their animals. But then they also have to hedge their inputs. Their feed costs, if you remember back to 11 and 12 when we had the drought, you know, the feed costs really hurt a lot of ranchers and hog producers. And that's really what, when we look at those guys, we say, okay, you've got two pools of risk, and that, how can we help you with that? And then we also do work with commercials, end users. We have some clients that are like mills and so on and so forth. Well, those guys, their herd prices go higher, so we hedge them because if you're, have a mill where, you're constantly in need of corn or wheat, you've got to manage your risk there as well, because if the prices get out of hand, it can hurt your bottom line. So depending on whatever business you're in, we will hedge somebody, and what we try and do is make sure that if the markets get really, really volatile, that doesn't hurt their bottom line.
So when you look and you see, we have news announcements and all these things come out, what true effect would you say that some of these reports actually have on the prices?
Well, I think there's two ways. Now with the high-frequency trading, which really took over in the last decade, but really got, after 08, 09, got really took hold, you have the instantaneous move off of a number, it doesn't matter if it's the unemployment number or if it's the USDA report. So you've got volatility, which, well, let's face it, 10, 15, 20 years ago, they would release the report, and then we'd have a two-hour window, and then by the time we actually started trading, it was human beings doing the trade. Now with the computers, it's really hard to catch that initial move. So I think that's one thing that's impacted how these numbers are digested. And then the second thing we've seen, in the last certainly since 07, 08, the panic of 08, 09. You saw a lot more money coming into commodities as a as an investment group. So years ago, you always had the index funds who just bought and held as an inflation hedge. Then 07, 08, you started to see the funds really get involved in commodities because with the panic we had in 08, 09, there was a big push where people actually wanted to own something physical. After the stock market went from 14.4 to 6,500. A lot of people didn't want to own anything in the equities, so you saw a lot of money pour into the commodities again in search of returns. That I think is what's different now. When these numbers come out, they've got the computer algorithms. They're searching for the two or three words in the release that will give them split second to either buy or
hold
sell.
Hold that thought on that split second, because I want to talk about that. And this is, you're listening to Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag, been around for a long time, got a lot of great information. And it's important that you listen, because this is what we talk about all the time in the equity market as well. It's not always about what you have, but it's about hedging and holding on to what you have. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you check out TheBubbaShow.org. We've got a lot of great reports up there. We're definitely ahead of the news. And make sure you get hooked up for the new Bubba Report. $99 a year. Gets it to you a minimum of 12 issues. We'll be back after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Chris Robinson. We'll be right back.
Stay with me now. Listen up.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag and also center from Colgate, or is that Colgate University, right? Colgate University?
Yep, up in upstate New York.
Upstate New York. And Chris, you know, as we look at, and we started to get into it before the break about the high frequency and also the need and the search for alternative investments. As you look at it, you guys are basically focused on the ag markets, right? So you're basically focused on softs and things like that. How important it is for every investor, not only farmers, but every investor to have some exposure and to be somewhat exposed to alternatives besides just the equity markets?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people always, you know, preach diversity. You know, most people, if they've got a 401k or IRA, you know, they're either in stocks or bonds. But, you know, commodities can play a role. Generally, people, you know, suggest, you know, if you've got your stocks and bonds covered, you know, maybe you throw 5 to 10% towards commodities because it can help round out a portfolio. Over a long period of time, there's some studies out there, especially with managed funds and stuff, where it can actually, you know, bump up your return. But again, it's not what you do for 1 or 2 years. It's how it impacts you over 5 or 10 years. And, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Go back and look. You know, there have been times when it's been great to be exposed to commodities, and there are other times where they've been in the doldrums. And you never know what it's going to be. If you look at gold, gold's a perfect example. If you know, it's set at $300 for 10 or 15 years. We really didn't get going until, you know, the late 90s, mid 2000s. So there's a time for every investment. Certainly, if you go back and look at the grains for years and years and years, we would have, you know, very narrow ranges in corn, wheat, and beans, except for harvest moves. But again, with the onset of investment funds and the desire for the financial community to monetize commodities as an investment, it's made things more volatile. And volatility produces opportunity. So if you're investing and you're looking for opportunity, that's what the commodities can give you. And I think that's something that, you know, like I said, if you've got your nuts and bolts covered, you know, the core of your investments covered, it makes sense to have some exposure to commodities because sometimes they can really add to your returns.
Okay, so listen, Chris, tell us, you know, you've been in the business for 23 years, I think, or 24 years. How'd you get in the business? What made you get in the business? What's it all about?
Well, you know, when I was about 18, 19, I got very, very interested in investing in general. And while I was at school, I read a bunch of books about trading and investing. You know, that's really what got me going initially. And I think the book that really changed my life is I read that first Money Masters. It was the first Wizards, Market Wizards, Jack Swagger's first book. And I read about Tom Baldwin. I read about Ed Sakota. I actually tracked down Ed Sakota the year after I graduated because I was going to go to law school. And I tracked down Ed Sakota. I went out and met him out in California for a three-day seminar. I tried to get a job with him, but he wasn't training anybody anymore. He made so much money, he was just kind of enjoying his life. But he was working with traders. He had his a group of guys that you know, he's in touch with. And I've stayed in touch with him, actually, over the years, periodically. So that was really my first exposure to it. I knew I wanted to be independent. I knew I wanted to be involved in the markets. And when I decided to come to Chicago, the moment I walked on the floor, I had a friend of mine that I played football with, and he had was trading in a 30-year pit, and that was the pit that was very lucrative at the time. If you could figure out how to trade in there and were successful, and that was where a lot of business was being done. My friend of mine was 3 years older than me. I came out, I walked on the floor, and I knew 10 minutes later that's exactly where I wanted to be. And that's why I stayed in Chicago. I loved the floor. I was sort of a creature of the floor. It was appealed to me. And, you know, I came here in, I think, 1990. And I worked about a year and a half, 2 years, and then saved up enough money to start trading. I started trading in the mini-am, and just sort of took it from there and just immersed myself in trying to meet as many successful traders as I knew. And you know, you did the same thing. You know, you've been out here for a long, long time. You get to know the guys that can help you with, you know, sort of the rules of the road. And I was fortunate. You know, I had a nice career on the floor. I'd still be on the floor if it hadn't gone all electronic. But the nice thing about the hedging business is it's allowed me to take my experience with managing a position. And that's the key. When you're a producer, if you're a long net long speculator, you need to manage that long position. And that's what my experience has sort of put me in a position where that's what I can do for the guys that work with me. I can help them manage that position. And that's what I like about what I do. It's kind of morphed into a different career. If you told me when I was 23 that I was going to be more of a broker and really hold, helping guys manage their risk, I don't think I would have believed you. But at the end of the day, I think it's actually something that I really enjoy, and I'm lucky that I've gotten a chance to get into this end of the business. And I do have people that trade with me, too, that are just completely speculative traders, you know, a typical person. And that's about 15 to 20% of my book. The other 80%, like I said, is pretty heavily leaning towards producers and end users. So I think I've been really fortunate to be out here and to have met some of the people that I've met, including you. You know, it's a nice business. You get to meet a lot of people that I think it's a good opportunity, and I'm really glad that I was able to be out here in Chicago, and I love the business.
Yeah, and what do you think of now that, of course, the all of the futures pits are closing? What's your take? What's your thought about that?
Well, quite honestly, I mean, they've really been closed for most people since about 08, 09. When the business, they gradually morphed into it. They had side by side. Once the business went to, 70-80% on the screen, there was real no reason to be in the pit, because one of the reasons you were in the pit is because it was the primary market. Every buy and every sell order came in, and that's really, if you were a floor trader, that's what you did. You just watched all day long, and it was kind of like a soap opera. You could see who was buying, who was selling. Switching to the electronic trading really completely changed the skill set that you needed to be successful, you know, as an independent trader or a scalper or a spreader, whatever it is you were doing to make a living. So that changed the business completely. It's just sort of the wave of the future. I think that probably 3, 4, 5 years from now, once they can figure out how to eliminate people with the options pits, that'll be done as well. But right now, they still need people because there are so many permutations when you're dealing with options and different strikes. You know, human beings are still better than machines. But I'm sure that somewhere in Chicago or out in Silicon Valley, there's some, you know, a 20-year-old kid working really hard to figure out how they can build a program to close the options as well. So at the end of the day, the function of the market stays the same. It's risk transfer. You've got a risk, and somebody in the marketplace will take the other side of the risk. That's the way you have to look at it. The mechanism's changed, but the principle stays the same. And that's why I think more people need to really understand that's what this place is here for. Yeah, it's here if you want to speculate and try and make money, but quite honestly, the long-term results, if you take 1,000 people, you know, about 7 to 8% of them over time will really be successful trading. It's a very, very difficult business if you want to be a full-time speculator. But the other 95%, and really why this place is here, why Chicago's here, is to defer risk. And, you know, it doesn't matter if your risk is in corn, wheat, and soybeans, or if your risk is in the interest rate market with bonds moving, or if your risk is in equity markets. I mean, I talk about this with you a lot. I don't think most people realize that if you're if you own an IRA or 401k, if you're net long, because you have to be, because that's what we're all told to do, you know, stay long over the long haul, you'll get your 8% return, and over 30 years, you'll do very, very well. But there are times when people don't want to be in the stock market or they're scared. You know, rather than trying to time the market and get in and get out, you know, I really think that most people will be better served when, if they really get nervous, rather than getting out of their positions, put a hedge on with a short position, you know, with a put either in the S&P or in the Dow, and that's your insurance policy. So if you have a stocks fund which has gone from, you know, 50 grand to 300 grand and you're worried, you don't want to watch it go back down to 150.
Hold that thought at 150, because we're going to come back and ask Chris more about this hedging, because it's something we cover here all the time on the Bubba Show. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag. Excellent in the markets, understands it. We'll be right back. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back.
Margie said, Roy, you ain't listening.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag. So, Chris, as we went to break, we were talking about the hedge. You were talking about hedging everything. So let's start off first, okay, with when you hedge your products, you know, and your specialty is the ag market, okay, which would be, as you said earlier, corn, wheat, and beans, which are the most recognized, but there are other agricultural products, including cattle and other things. And then, of course, we talked about the stock market. But a typical hedge, what would be something that you would do for a typical hedge for a producer?
Well, a typical hedge for a grain producer or for somebody that has a stock position?
A grain producer. Let's go to your specialty first. Not that they're not all your specialty, but let's go to what you do.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Our strategy is we want to keep the upside completely open. So we don't do strategies where I'll start with a real rudimentary. A put is a substitute sale. A put makes money if the market goes lower. A call is re-ownership, so it's like being long. The call will make money if we go higher. The put makes money if we go lower. At the end of the day, we know our guys are net long speculators, so we want to make sure we've got a floor in place. We want to leave the upside completely open, because with volatility in the grain markets, all it takes is a 2 to 3 or 4 week window of some sort of weather issue or some sort of demand issue, and you can have extremely high moves. We want our clients to be in a position to be able to sell grain when they want to sell grain, And so we want to keep the upside completely open. Now, that's that key. There are other strategists out there who think that their charts tell them that this is where the window's going to be, so we can sell a call to pay for a put. My experience after doing this for 23, 24 years is that can be, it's a great strategy some of the time, but when you really have a volatile weather market, it can really cost you a lot of dough. Because what you do is you're setting yourself a floor, which is great. You're making sure that you've got your break-even covered, but then you're limiting your profits. And if you're a producer, that's the last thing you want to do. You don't want to limit your profits, and unless your timing's perfect. And let's face it, not a lot of people's
timing. No basis. We can say that out loud. Anybody who thinks they can time the market is full of crap. We can say. I'll say it for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a million guys out there that will, you know, try and convince people that that's what they know what they're doing. And honestly, if they could do that, they wouldn't be a broker. You know, at the end of the day, if you knew where the highs and the lows were, you'd be like George Soros or Jimmy Rogers or some of these guys that, you know, they're the 0.00001% guys that, or the Monroe Trouts that had that gift. You know, those guys don't talk to farmers and producers though. So I try and deal with based on reality as opposed with fantasy, and that's a big thing. So at the end of the day, I don't want to put a cap on my client's upside potential. We saw that if you go back to 10, 11, 12, there were guys that bought 350 corn puts but then sold $5 calls against it. Well, corn went to $7. These guys had the pleasure of delivering $5 corn and making margin calls while their neighbor who did nothing was selling $7 corn. You know, so you don't want your hedge to create problems for you. And that's, I think, the number two rule in our book of hedging is you don't want your hedge to come back and hurt you. So for that reason, we stay disciplined. We stay pretty simple. That old expression, KASS, you know, keep it simple, stupid.
Are you calling me stupid again?
What'd you say?
I said, are you calling me stupid again?
No, yeah, just you and me, that's it. So we try to keep it simple, and we try and put ourselves in a position to, if we do get a great market, it's a good marketing opportunity, you know? So and that's a big thing. So that's a hedge strategy that I'll always look for. The other thing is with producers, we've seen a huge increase in the amount of on-farm storage here in the last 10 years. Okay. Well, the problem with that is farmers don't realize when they sit on a lot of grain as a storage, they're basically in the elevator business. Now, that's another group of clients that we work with. Elevators, you know, that actually buy the grain and hold it and then resell it. So farmers have to realize that if they've got 20, 30, 40, 50,000 bushels of storage on their property, yeah, it's great because it allows them to hold on to their physical wealth, and that's the way they look at it. It's like it's wealth. It's like money in the bank. But that's also an asset. And when you've got wheat swinging $2 since December, if you've got, suppose you had 100,000 bushels worth of wheat sitting in a bin, you know, if you did no hedging between last December and these recent contract lows, $2 on 100,000 bushels, that's $200,000 worth of potential profit that you left on the table, you know, simply because you know you thought the prices were going to go higher. So that's something that I really work with a lot of guys over the past, I said, especially in the past 5 to 10 years, a lot of guys built a lot of on-farm storage. Why wouldn't they? You had corn and wheat and beans at record prices. You know, beans in the teens. You had $8 corn, $7 corn. You had $9 and $10 wheat. So human nature is, oh, I'm going to, you know, build up my stores and haul onto it. If you are a producer and a farmer, and if you don't realize that you're actually in the elevator business, then you need somebody to kind of tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you need to hedge this, because not hedging can expose you to, you're not losing money until you actually sell it, right? It's never a loser until you actually sell it. But if you allow yourself to take $2 worth of heat without having a hedge on, from my perspective, that's a bad business decision. So try and look at it from a business perspective, and I think that's the last thing too. Guys get really emotional, and you've seen this too, you know, being on the floor. the less emotional you are over the long term, the better you'll do. And farmers get emotional about their grain. Some farmers, you know, they hate to sell their grain. It's like they're selling, you know,
Selling their firstborn. I get it.
Yeah, and to them it's their wealth, you know, and I think it's in their gene pool. If they're fourth or fifth generation, you know, they know that their great 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 grandfather built it by, you know, hanging on to his wheat and selling it when prices were good. The problem is, the markets we have today are not the markets that your grandfather had or your great grandfather had. They're just not, and that's because of electronic trading. That's because of the investment funds pushing things around. We have so much more volatility. And I can remember if we had a 10-cent range in beans, you know, I would have sweated through two jackets and gone through, you know, 600 trading cards. Now we have a 10-second trading range in the first 30 seconds of trade.
Well, and, you know, that, and that's
10,
true.
10-cent move. So,
that's 100% true. So when you – now, the option market, is the option market – I'm assuming you use a lot of options when you're doing the hedge?
Oh, yeah, we like to use options, again, because you're already a net long speculator if you're a hedger. Why add to your potential financial risk by having to put margin money up in an account? Now, some guys like that because they get one for one, but if you're following our strategy is, you know, we want to make sure that we've got the floor covered. And so we use the put option, kind of like your car insurance or your life insurance. If I buy a put option, I actually want to lose that premium because I want my grain to sell higher. If I put 10 or 15 cents into an option, I'm hoping that grains rally, 40 to 50 cents, because that's where your producer's money is, in the bin and in the fields. It's not trading, and it's not trading futures. It's not trading options. The options are there to protect you for the unseen, and that's why I like our strategy. It allows you to maintain your bullishness. Every farmer's a bull. It allows you to maintain your bullishness, but I call it you're bullish, but you're an intelligent bull, because you are managing a huge financial downside risk, and it's always the thing that nobody sees coming. There's a lot of brokers out there that will tell producers what they want to hear. What they want to hear is that it's going to be, you know, we're going to have higher prices. Just hold on and have faith. Again, I try and look at it more from a realistic standpoint, and that's what Mark, instilled in us as well. Don't get emotional. Treat it like it's a business. Use your hedge. Your hedge, it should be a line in your budget. You got a line in your budget for fertilizer, you have a line in your budget for fuel, you have a line in your budget for seed. You need to have a line in your budget for your marketing, because for so many farmers, their idea of marketing is, all right, I'm going to put $500 an acre into the crop, and, well, prices, well, I'll sell them when I think it's high. You know, and again, that worked for generations and generations, but in the last decade and a half, it's been a strategy that has certainly cost some guys some money, and also too, it's that old thing where if you could sell your grain, you know, nobody's going to sell it at the top, but if you're selling your grain, you know, above the midpoint, that's what we want to try and do. We want to try and get the top one third of prices that are available in a marketing year, because statistics show, Bubba, that, you know, the government statistics are that most farmers, if you take the broad swath of the farmers in the U.S., they sell their grain in the bottom half, and some of them actually even sell in the bottom third. So
that's because we'll talk about that when we come back from the bank. That is because they are terminal bulls, and of course,
yeah.
You can't be terminal anything. Terminal is not a good word in this business or in any business.
That's right.
We are with Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag, and he's a risk manager for them. And again, you can see him on all the major networks, Fox, CNBC. You can also see him on Sky News. And you got to check him out. He knows what he's talking about. Check him out at Top Third Ag. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by here for a break and come back and finish up with Chris as he gives us some more of what's going on and what to do with our money as far as the farming community and everybody else. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag, also a senator at Colgate in upstate New York. And Chris, I know there's a couple of things you wanted to go over with us, but just real quickly before we get into the reports that are coming out and things that people should be doing, when you were trading for yourself, what kind of trader were you?
You know what? I'd come in the day with really no opinion, and then I would watch and I would try and put a core position on for the day, and then the rest of the time I would scalp around it. I mean, that was the key. If you were in a good spot in the pit, you know, real estate was all about everything there. If you were in a good spot with the pit, I would just basically was an edge trader. But throughout the trading day, you would sort of get a feel for what was going on, and then I would put my core position on. And it didn't matter, and when I was first starting out, that core position could have been, you know, two contracts. You know, later on when I got more successful, it was obviously longer. But that's what I do. I'd have a core position on that I held, and then throughout the day, there were opportunities to sort of trade the edge. And then I think I was very, very flexible. I had a lot of friends of mine that were spreaders. And that's another thing. If I got a good edge on a good thing and I wanted to hold it, I would spread it. And by spread it, I mean I would go in one of the back months. So if I was in the top step and I got a good edge, then I'd look into the back months to lay off that edge. And I think that was good training because actually that in itself was a kind of a mini hedge. You know, you're long one option, one futures option, and you have to look and say, all right, I need to make sure that I don't open myself up for unlimited risk. And over the years, that's what I saw. The guys that were most successful were the guys that respected the risk, did not overtrade, did not get full of themselves when they were doing well, and also did not get very, very depressed when you know, they were cold. And I think that strategy served me well, to be very flexible, to not get married to your ideas. Another gentleman that was a good friend of mine, his name was Joe Griffin. I'm still in touch with Joe. He was a very successful trader, and he told me that when I was about 23. He said, Chris, he said, would you rather be right or would you rather make money? And I think that's something that most traders and hedgers, producers, what have you, you've got to ask yourself every morning when you're brushing your teeth or you're shaving your face, is it more important to you to be right? Or is it more important that you make money either for yourself or for your family? And I think that's something that even today I ask myself that a lot. Is it your ego that's talking, or are you actually looking at it from an objective standpoint and not let your emotions control your decisions?
And I think there's nothing more important than that. And speaking of emotions and things, those do come out a lot. We come out to some of these reports that I know you want to talk about. So tell us what we should expect coming up here in the near future.
Well, you know, 2015 has been a dismal year for producers. We've been in a narrow trading range, and we've been trading lower. The best prices for new crop corn were actually back pre-Christmas, around December 18th. We had a spike run up. The high of the year for new crop corn was 480. We were above 10 bucks in beans, and the wheat, again, was $2 higher than where it is now. So producers that were hoping and praying and then hoping that prices were going to go higher, that's been a kind of a dismal marketing strategy this year. It worked for you for really 2008 on to do nothing and hope for higher prices. Last year we sort of saw the worm turn a little bit, and then this year it's looking like it's going to be a year where a lot of people are going to be regretting the fact that they didn't have more of a defined marketing plan, a defined risk management plan. Now, could it turn around? Yeah. What's it going to take to turn around? It's going to take around some sort of severe weather issue, you know, with Mother Nature, because the USDA's told us time and time again, the world is awash in grain, corn, wheat, beans, what have you. There's plenty of it out there, and that's the thing that's weighing on our grain markets. The other thing is, too, you know, we watch the U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar sits within a stone's throw, sits within 5 cents of that par level, which is a 12-year high. The U.S. dollar at highs makes it harder for us to export. Our exports are down across the board sharply compared to where they were last year, about a third lower than where they were this time last year. China's economy may be slowing down. They may be sitting on a lot of expensive wheat. So that was the kind of the ace in the hole for a long, long time. You had huge Chinese demand. Now maybe China, we'll have to wait and see, but they may be sitting on a lot of expensive grain. So it's kind of a perfect bearish storm, unfortunately. But and a lot of producers are certainly negative right now and kind of down in the dumps. My strategy would be the same. Don't get emotional. Don't throw the towel in. Make sure that you've got, take a look at what's available today and make sure that you've got some sort of safety net underneath you. If you don't know what you're doing, you don't have to call me, but get with a broker that understands how to hedge and how to manage a position once you have the position on. And we are about 10 business days, I think. June 30th is a very, very big number. It's the final planning report, plus we get a stocks number. If you go back and look at a historical chart, the end of June is always a big move. We either put a low in and start rallying, or we are unable to take out highs and start drifting lower. So it's a very important report. Nobody knows what Mother Nature has in store for us. We've been getting dumped on here with too much rain. There's about 4.5 million acres of soybeans that haven't gotten planted yet, and Missouri and throughout the Midwest because it's been too wet. The beans that have been planted are young, and they don't like, the expression is they don't like wet feet. The young beans don't like sitting in water. The corn loves it. So there's still some opportunity out there, and it's a long marketing year. We're halfway through the year, but nobody knows. If you could tell me, Bubba, where beans are going to be come harvest, wouldn't we both just put the position on and go to Aruba and wait for our check, right?
Absolutely. There is no way to time the market. There are certain key things, though, I think you look for in the grain markets. You use the hedging strategies that Chris talks about, but also you look, I bought corn. I've been doing this since 1981, but I bought corn at in the late 90s at $1.80. I go, okay, is it going to zero? So there's certain key things you look for as well, because there are certain price points where you go, wow, is it really going to go to zero? Are we going to be out of business? And of course, you and I both know that that's not the case. But I thought you were one of the guys that they told ahead of time. You got somebody tapped you on the shoulder and told you what the next move was. So you didn't have to worry about all this crap.
Yeah, I wish I had that information. All I need is tomorrow's newspaper today, and then you'd never see me again. And that's the key. And if you're working with a broker or somebody, or even if you've got somebody that's helping you, speculative trade, I think that individual's got to be honest with you and say, hey, look, it's at the end of the day, it's like playing a giant game of poker. It's like playing no-limit poker where you see the cards keep turning. Every time there's another card, there's some more information. Every time there's another report, there's some more information. At the end of every day, we know what the high, low, and settlement is. That's the beauty about free markets. Every day we have price discovery. Everybody with all their opinions get together. Anybody with a computer and a functioning mouse pad, they're suddenly a trader. So if you have an idea, there's nothing stopping you from buying or selling, and that's the beauty of Chicago and what it allows us to do. At the end of the day, we know what December corn is worth. It's not some politician's guess. It's not some banker's guess. It's not somebody saying, well, we think it's worth this. No, what it's worth today. And that's the beauty about what Chicago is. That's really why Chicago, came to be. That we can talk about that some other time. But the reason this place is here is because this is where the risk was, and people needed some place to lay off their risk. And the heart and soul of being a hedger is to recognize that without knowing what the future is, without having a crystal ball, you need to do some risk management, and that's really the key is. And my strategy is get a floor in place, keep the upside open, and go ahead and be a bull. Be a bull, and that's great. That's the nature of a farmer. But make sure that if something unforeseen happens, that you're in business 2, 3, 4 years from now.
And that's the key. Be in business. Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag, it's been a pleasure. I hope you'll come back and visit us again. I think that you brought a lot of light to, what we talk about, whether it be equities or agricultural. So we appreciate your time.
Todd, thanks a lot.
This has been Chris Robinson from Top Third Ag. Make sure you check out his website. Check him out. You see him all the time. This has been The Bubba Show, and make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. We put up a lot of reports for you, plus we do have the new Bubba report that just came out. We're now in our third issue, $99 a year, gets you at least 12 issues, including my proprietary indexes, and I also have a proprietary index on the grain markets. Explain them to you, but that'll do it for today. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
Turn the noise down.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.